The courts have confirmed that employers need to take cultural values and beliefs into account for all employment practices. This is Stuff Employers Should Know.
Welcome to Stuff Employers Should Know, proudly brought to you by Labornet, management's ultimate HR solution.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Barry Gordon-Davis, and keeping our sound levels in check is Yasser Ismail.
Wow, I've been given such a boring name today. Thanks, Barry.
I wanted the listeners to actually know that you actually have a normal name.
Oh, okay.
But since you asked, it's Yasser, yes, like it, Ismail.
Oh, that's more like it.
And our guest today is Audrey Lowe, the IR Support Desk Manager at Labornet, which basically means that you spend all of your day answering people's industrial and employment relations questions.
Thanks for having me, Barry. This should be a fun one.
Yeah, should be an easy one for you then, hey?
Always.
Well, last week we spoke about the award that came out of the CCMA, specifically where it was making the rounds on social media and in news agencies because it was that, call it groundbreaking situation where an employee was actually found to be fairly terminated for refusing to take the mandatory vaccine or adhere to their mandatory vaccine policy. Shortly after that, we then saw another award come out of the CCMA where an employee was suspended for failing to get vaccinated. And I thought, let's just get some comment on that.
Well, Barry, the most important thing to remember with cases like these, this case, much like the one that came out last week, was very, very adamant that the employer has a lot of hoops that they have to jump through before they can look at something like this. And we have to remember, this was not some kind of punitive suspension because the employee is being obstinate or refusing to vaccinate. It was merely refusing him access to the workplace because he was deemed unfit to work when he was not vaccinated and when he couldn't prove at this point that he was in fact COVID-19 negative.
And by hoops, you're talking risk assessment. And I think that's what we were driving home even in last week's episode, is that a risk assessment is not just a decision by a company that they need a mandatory vaccination policy to be implemented. It is a proper process where all the checks and balances are done. And those are basically the hoops that you're talking about.
Absolutely.
And it's not even as simple as just jumping through hoops, but yes, it's really getting all your checks and balances in there and providing an objective reasoning for you then implementing such a policy.
Well, for implementing the policy, point number one, the other thing that they were very adamant about is if you are going to deny access or dismiss an employee for failing to vaccinate, you must have first considered all possible alternatives.
Yeah.
So if I can't find somewhere else to put you, if I can't find an alternative position, if there's no other way for us to handle the fact that you're not being vaccinated, like not putting you in touch with other employees or clients or so on, it has to be the last resort.
Yes. And again, as we said last week, this is not case law. It's awards out of the CCMA. We'll see whether they then get their day in court. But at this point in time, it's guidance. It's our way of seeing what's happening. But enough about vaccines. Let's move on to today's topic. And a very interesting one. It's very well known amongst, you know, the law fraternity. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about atypical situations that employers might find themselves in, specifically where they are then having to deal with religious or cultural beliefs of some of their employees that might be having an impact on their ability to adhere to their contractual obligations. Specifically, in this instance, we're going to refer to case law where an individual had the calling or an ancestral calling. And just a bit of an intro with regards to that. When an individual in the Zulu culture has an ancestral calling, he or she sometimes presents with symptoms and signs that are similar to those of a person with a mental illness or even psychosis. And an individual then needs to go through a process of unkuthuwasa in order to be healed from the signs and symptoms of an ancestral possession and to become a traditional healer. Now, we know that in the Western psychiatric view, illness is perceived purely in physical and psychological terms. So this obviously creates a bit of a conflict for us on dealing with illness aspects, or is this an illness, or is it a cultural belief, or is it where do we then categorize the calling? So that's really what we want to deconstruct today. And using the case law, specifically the Kivitz Kruin Country State versus Moledi and others that went through the SEA. We'll give the full citation in the description. where an employee that wished to train as a Sangoma was ultimately dismissed. So, Audrey, in brief, what happened in this matter that led to this dispute?
Well, Barry, this really is a very interesting case. So, Miss Moledi had started suffering from what they described as visions from ancestors. So she went to a traditional healer to figure out how to make it stop, and she was told the only way to appease the ancestors was to go through training and become a Sangoma herself. So she approached her employer, who was initially happy to accommodate her by making sure that she had shifts only in the mornings and not in the afternoons. They'd spoken to the rest of the workforce, who were happy to accommodate her in this manner. And for a couple of months, that's what they did. Where the problem came in is when she came back to the employer and said that she was finalizing the training and she would now need to be out for a month full time attending the course. So she had asked the employer for a month's unpaid leave so that she could attend full time. So at this point, of course, the employer was not very happy to accommodate her. He was short-staffed at the time. So he denied her request for a full month unpaid leave. They were happy to accommodate her by granting annual leave. She didn't have any available at the time, so they agreed to 1 week of unpaid leave, which was not enough for Milady to complete the training. So she then absented herself for the full month. She provided the employer with notes from a traditional healer stating that she had to complete the full training course. And of course, the employer at that point decided that this was unauthorized absenteeism and put her through a disciplinary hearing, after which she was dismissed.
Then obviously the referral that went all the way through the courts ended up at the Supreme Court of Appeal. And what was really put to the courts was effectively the business interests versus the needs or necessity of the employee to go through this ancestral calling or complete that whole process.
Yes, so what the courts considered in going through this case was, as you said, the need of the employer to make sure that operations run smoothly versus the employee's requirement or need to undergo this cultural training, which the employer obviously did not believe in themselves. And the main concept that came from that initial case is that for the employee, this was a case of necessity. And what she was being asked to do was to weigh up her life, because she had believed that she would possibly die or suffer some serious misfortune if she did not complete the training, versus keeping the employer happy. And the CCMA said it was rather obvious at this point. You cannot ask an employee to put their own life over the will or the requirements of the employer. You must choose yourself in that kind of situation. And they believed that the employer had been rather unempathetic in dismissing the employee under these kinds of circumstances. And there was a lack of empathy or understanding for the cultural diversity in the workplace and taking into account the considerations of the different cultures and beliefs and the concept of Ubuntu that we try to foster in South Africa.
Now, there was obviously critique on the employer's stance of treating the matter as a misconduct. Now, we know that obviously for the purposes of this podcast, it's, you know, how do employers deal with this? And what was the learning that we took away from it? And what was the court's opinion as to how they should have then dealt with the process from a procedural point of view?
So the main contention from the employer in this case was that the employee could not claim that she was ill for the full month. So she had provided the certificates and the letters from the traditional healers, which, of course, the employer dismissed out of hand, considering this is not a registered medical practitioner in terms of an organization that was established by an act of parliament, and therefore they carried no weight in terms of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act.
Basically, the employer was saying, you did not provide a valid sick note
exactly.
for this calling.
Exactly. So you don't have a valid sick note. We're not going to accept that this is an illness, and therefore you were not entitled to be off for a full month.
Now, that's where we're now calling it an illness, and that's obviously where we went wrong. But how do you then categorize a subjective cultural or religious calling, for example? How do you then categorize it, and how do you deal with it?
So the court spoke about that aspect at length as well, the classification of this as an illness. Instead of calling it anything particular, they refer to this as a condition, rendering the employee unfit for duty. So whether we call it an illness, whether we call it, you know, a case of incapacity, the main concept that this bubbles down to is whether the employee at that point had a valid reason to not be at work. And there are quite a number of different elements that we have to dig into to consider whether there was a valid reason at that stage.
And that's obviously why they then added weight to the note from the traditional healer, because it wasn't looked at through the eyes of illness, but just to prove the reasoning for the person's absence.
Indeed. So because this is not an illness, this is not something that the courts or employers for that matter would be equipped to properly investigate and determine the legitimacy of. So what the court said in this case is that it's not for the employer or for the court to question the employee's cultural beliefs once they have stated that there is a condition or a calling or whatever we would like to call it. We have to basically accept it on face value. However, we can still try and get some kind of evidence or some kind of backing for this employee's condition. And this is where something like testimony from a traditional healer or a certificate from a traditional healer would come in, basically to explain to the employer or to the court what is going on with the employee, why they need to be absent for a certain period of time, and what the consequences would be if they don't. So it would be for the traditional healers to basically convince us and explain to us what the employee's condition or situation is at that point, upon which we then need to consider whether we have to accommodate or not and whether it's reasonable under the circumstances.
Now, I remember when this matter came out, and I think it was 2014, employers were obviously very concerned about this, and they thought that this was going to be opening the floodgates to malpractice. And, you know, it seemed to mean that, you know, that there's now an imbalance of rights in this relationship, because your cultural and religious beliefs now basically take preference over any business interests or operational requirements. Does that mean that the employer is effectively toothless when it comes to dealing with these things? But what, and I think maybe the best way to phrase the question is that where an employer genuinely cannot accommodate a similar matter, a calling or like, where they genuinely can't have a person go off for a period of time or put in any other measures, what would they do in that situation?
So this is, I almost want to say this is simpler than it seems. This is all a question of fairness, both to the employee and to the employer. So we would have to weigh both their positions in a case like this to determine whether it would be fair under the circumstances to grant leave for something like an ancestral calling. So things that the court considered in this particular matter was, point number one, the employer knew where the employee was for that month. They knew how long she was going to be away. They had gotten the documentary backing from a traditional healer stating that if the employee does not do this, she may die or suffer some serious misfortune. And the fact that the employee had been in service with the employer for 18 years prior, and also the fact that the employer had conceded that had you had a valid medical certificate, you would not have been dismissed.
So yeah, they basically said you provided.
Then we could accommodate you.
If you brought a doctor's note, we could have taken you back. But because there was not one, and that's obviously again found as misconduct, and that was the reasoning being.
Exactly.
But they obviously interpret that as, well, you could have then accommodated if it was done through a capacity procedure.
And by virtue of that, it was considered that you would have suffered no serious harm by granting this employee unpaid leave for a month. If you could have done it for a genuine illness in your mind, you could have done this to accommodate the cultural belief as well.
Now, we did speak about traditional healers, so we have to, and I mean, the whole point of the show is, you know, providing employers with stuff they should know, and we spoke about traditional healers, notes, and the like. So, when we talk about genuine incapacity due to medical reasons, and when I say genuine, I'm talking to medical aspects, as written in the LRA, there is recognition of traditional healers. In what way?
So the Basic Conditions of Employment Act requires an employee to provide what they call proof of incapacity, which would be a medical certificate stipulating certain information, and this must be issued by a medical practitioner who is registered with a body that was established by an Act of Parliament. So we do currently have quite a number of associations who are registered, And we have traditional healers who are then registered with these bodies and are fully entitled to give a legitimate medical certificate that has to be accepted by the employer. So it comes down to checking whether the traditional healer is registered with a legitimate body or not. If they're not registered, I don't have to look at it in terms of illness per se. If they are registered, you treat it as you would any other normal medical certificate.
And to reiterate, in our case in question, the fact that the traditional healer was not registered was immaterial because we weren't looking at it from a medical point of view. It was an atypical type of capacity issue. Now, in conclusion, and what we want to do is obviously have a takeaway from the show. Employers might not be faced with identical situation or identical matter that we can compare to this case. But what is your advice to employers who end up with a situation where they have an employee that has a very different request or claims that they are unable to adhere to their contractual obligations due to A, B, C, or D that can be categorized as a cultural belief or a religious belief or the like? What should an employer do from that get-go?
So again, most important part is making sure that we adhere to aspects of fairness. So for a situation like this where we're dealing with an ancestral calling or something that we're not particularly familiar with in terms of the Western regime of things, what you would have to look at is whether the employee has a legitimate belief. There's a sincere belief that they need to undergo some kind of training or initiation. You'd have to look at what they would perceive to be the consequences if they don't go through this particular process. You'd look at whether there are possible ulterior motives behind asking for leave to attend something like this. And then we can do a further investigation by asking, can I get an appointment with your traditional healer or your cultural leader to understand what your condition is, what the process is going to entail, and what is going to happen if you don't do this. And then as the employer, you can also speak to that traditional healer and to the employee in terms of, can this be accommodated some other time? Can we schedule this for a time where it's operationally more viable to the employer to do so? Can we stagger it over different periods of time, or is it essential for you to do this right now on fear of death? So those are all things that we would look at to determine whether or not it would be fair under the circumstances to accommodate the employee. But the courts were very clear, it's not a free-for-all for employees to go off to their ancestral callings and I can never dismiss you. One of the cases that was considered as well was Tubatse Chrome, where an employee had literally just disappeared for an extended period of time without informing the employer, without telling them where they were going, and just pitched after a couple of months saying, well, I was on an ancestral calling. And in that case, the court said that was unreasonable views the employee, and the employer was well within their rights there to dismiss, because they had spoken to a traditional healer who had testified that this person could have done this at some other point. There was no serious repercussions for not doing it immediately. And on that basis, it was said that the employee wasn't entitled to just follow their own head and do what they like without getting prior authorization first.
So what we're really taking away from this is that as South Africa is such a melting pot of different cultures, different beliefs, backgrounds and the like, that we really have to take into account everybody's constitutional rights in that regard. And employers have to have an open mind and not just look at these things through narrow blinkers and the likes, and really go and apply and look and see and look at the background, look at the circumstances, take into account totality of circumstances, and then apply a outcome on that.
Try and understand each other, and it's a case of fairness. That's it.
Audrey, thank you so much for your time today. It's been great chatting to you, and I hope that you are back in studio with us soon and soon to become a friend of the show.
Thank you, Barry. It was great being here.
So that's it for this interesting episode of Stuff Employers Should Know. As always, get in touch on social media or drop us an email at sesk@labournet.com. Give us your input and let us know if you've ever had to deal with such a situation as we discussed today, whether it was you or your business. And also, let us know if there's any topics that you would like us to discuss in future. It really helps us improve and push out quality content that you want to hear. So from myself, BGD, and Yas, till next week, stay safe and cheers.
Stuff Employers Should Know was proudly brought to you by LabourNet, management's ultimate HR solution. For more episodes from Stuff Employers Should Know, go to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you play your favorite shows. Case law or statutes referenced in the podcast are current at the time of recording.